Hey, good morning. This is Atlanta Business Radio. This is Eric Wolf filling in for Amy Otto, and we've got Lee Cantor here.
How you doing, Eric?
I'm a little bit nervous, and I'm also fighting a cold, which is...
That's a bad combination.
Compromising my radio voice. And we have two great guests today. Our show theme for today is going to be advice for entrepreneurs and what you need to get started, the things that you should know. And we've got two experts with us today, Holly Green, who is an author, a former executive for of the Ken Blanchard Companies, and author of More Than a Minute, an entrepreneur herself. We've got Brian Patrick Cork with us as well, who will be joining us later. And Brian was just named to the Inc. 500.
The show, before we get started, the show is sponsored by TAB of Northwest Atlanta. That's the Alternative Board of Northwest Atlanta, and that brings together owners of privately held businesses to overcome challenges and seize new opportunities with a combination of peer advice and strategic business coaching. You can go to tab-nwatlanta.com for more information.
Great. So we're ready to go. Welcome, Holly.
Thank you.
The first thing I wanted to bring up, well, first of all, you've got a book that's just come out. It's called More Than a Minute, How to Be an Effective Leader and Manager in Today's Changing World. Can we start by talking about the book a little bit?
Sure. Absolutely.
Let's talk about the title. You were formerly the president of the Ken Blanchard Company, and, of course, the title of the book is a play on his famous book, The One-Minute Manager.
Right.
Tell us how that came about.
Well, The One-Minute Manager is the best-selling, all-time best-selling management book, but it was written 26 years ago. So if you look at what's changed in the world in 26 years, there are some core principles explored in that book, in The One-Minute Manager, but the world around them has completely changed. Employees have changed. The way we communicate has changed. Competitive situations have changed. Customers have changed, etc. And so my book really updates and says, how do you do it today? What principles have survived the test of time? What's new? What does it require today to be a great leader and manager?
Can you share some of those with our listeners?
Certainly. I'd be more than happy to. In The One-Minute Manager, Ken and Spencer Johnson is his co-author, basically give you three secrets. They talk about goal setting, praising, and reprimands. I don't know about you, but you can just imagine trying to reprimand an employee today.
Yes, that doesn't work as well now.
Huh? Yeah, not quite the same. And goal setting then was really much more about telling your employee what to do in the very short term. Goal setting today has got to be linked to the bigger picture. So in my book, we explore it as part of strategic planning. And strategic planning applies to someone just starting their business, where it's maybe even more critical than a large company, looking out over the course of the next just few years. You know, and that was another big change, is we used to do strategic planning for a 10-year time horizon. Today, it's really 3 years is about the time horizon we want to look at to consider longer term. And linking people's roles and responsibilities and the things they do to the bigger picture. And that's kind of it in a nutshell, really setting the stage for excellence in your organization. As far as feedback, as we joke, reprimand is not quite the way that we would do it today. One of the elements we have to deal with in today's workforce, and again, this is if you're a small company or a multi-billion dollar organization, is that we've got four different generations at work in the United States for the first time. And so each of those generations requires something just a little bit different as far as their motivation, their inspiration, et cetera. And so feedback we've got to look at in that much broader context and create an overall culture of high performance versus work with just individuals. The individuals are still certainly critical. So it's an and both proposition today instead of, you know, let me tell you what you need to focus on this next week.
But how do you deal with accountability?
Well, you have to build a system of accountability. Accountability doesn't magically happen. When I'm connected to the bigger picture, when I understand how and why what I do progresses the company overall, number one, I'm much more likely to hold myself accountable because I understand if I don't, what the potential repercussions are. Number two, you have to have a system of feedback, and that's not only feedback from your boss to you, But that's what I call up, down, and sideways feedback. Everyone engaged and involved. So if you say in a meeting, I'm going to deliver, you know, this project plan on Friday, your peers are going to get all over you if you don't deliver the project plan on Friday, not just your boss.
Right.
So it's holding each other accountable. It's a much, you know, it's a flattened hierarchy today. It's a much more interactive system that you would want in any size company today.
And you spoke about strategic planning and the difference between 26 years ago and today. And one thing that I've certainly learned from both my corporate experience and in the small business world is that, unlike when, say, my parents were entering the workforce, people at all levels of an organization today are really expected to take part in a strategic planning process, as opposed to, it's not as simple as sort of the Chiefs and Indians scenario that everybody
used to
talk about.
Right, like where it was top down, where one guy sat up there and told everybody else what to do and everybody else just did it.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Except.
Well, and, you know, you can still do it that way. Unfortunately, there are some extreme disadvantages for doing that. When I work with clients, I always say there's no one perfect way. Everything has its advantages and disadvantages, and I think that's a big difference from yesteryear as well. Before, you know, there was one best practice, here's the way we're all supposed to do it. Well, today there are winning practices. There are a multitude of ways to accomplish most everything we need to do in an organization. The key is to make an informed choice. If you're going to have a very small team do your strategic planning, then you need to understand what the trade-offs are. What are the disadvantages to that approach? If you're going to involve everyone in the organization in it in some way, then there are some disadvantages there, too. It takes longer. It might be a little more costly. But there are some extreme advantages as well. So today it's much more about making an informed choice based on the situation you're in at the time. If you have great trust in your organization and pretty good communications, you may not have to involve everyone. If you don't have that, you probably need to help you build some of that trust. So there's all sorts of elements and moving pieces and parts today that you know, it's just a much more complex world.
Do you have any tips to help somebody deal with maybe they have a virtual staff where they're never even meeting the people they're working with?
Oh, that's a great question. Sure. I mean, it's all about communications, and so you just have to use what channels you have. Whether that's, you know, conference calls, email certainly is very effective if you use it properly. Webinars can be a wonderful way. Virtual meetings, even on SecondLife.com. You know, it's a pretty cool tool. IBM is using it. Harvard's using it. MIT is using it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard people using Second Life for that, but that's actually really, really interesting.
Oh, absolutely. I just joined a global professional association not long ago. They sent me my first email and said, you know, welcome, we're glad you've joined. Please come to our orientation on our island on secondlife.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, so there are all sorts of ways that we can communicate today, but you must communicate. That is also one of the huge differences, is the volume of communication has got to be ratcheted up, again, whether you're a firm of, you know, three people or a firm of 3,000.
Now, you've worked in and around a lot of different sizes of companies. What's changed for you? Because you're not only an author and somebody that's got executive experience, but you're also now an entrepreneur, and you're running your own business. How easy has it been for you to apply the things that you talk about in terms of leadership style and good management practices? How have you been able to translate those to your own business?
Oh, I hate when someone holds me accountable.
Accountability is the key to everything, Holly. Didn't we just talk about that?
Listen, it's not easy. I tell all of my clients, and, you know, it's the same thing for myself, this stuff is not easy. Carving out the time and the space to do it right rather than do it over is a challenge for us today. We are bombarded with information and with tasks and unimportant stuff on our PDAs constantly. We've got to make time to do what's important in our organizations. And the world is not set up to support that. And so it's more and more of a challenge. I do a lot of work, I think, as you might know, Eric, in innovating every day. I do a lot of workshops and keynote speeches on that. And that's one of the things I really talk to people a lot about, is we're very visual creatures. get in front of you the things that are important to have in front of you instead of just all the email on your PDA. Mm-hmm. And I use those same practices and tips myself. You know, in my office, I've got the things in front of me, my own strategy, my own communications plans for my employees. And, you know, and I make use of my PDA by sending myself notes on it and messages so that I'm constantly looking at visually what is critical to run a successful business today. Don't allow yourself to get caught up in the busyness around unimportant. You really, today, it is so much more important to focus your energies and keep everyone aligned to what's important. There are just too many opportunities, too many things pulling at our time and attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your book, is it only for managers, or does it trickle down the information for employees as well?
It's definitely for anyone in an organization. It's how to be a great manager and leader, both kind of the being and the doing. You know, what do you need to do? But certainly I'd recommend it for anyone, anyone even leading a small team of people, supervisors, but just, you know, just an employee who wants to learn more about business and the right ways to get things done. A couple of the chapters in particular are very focused on creating a context for excellence and feedback, both positive and constructive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those apply to anyone, in a non-for-profit, any kind of organization.
Well, one last question, Holly. What do you think is the – if you were talking to somebody that was about to start their own business, what would be the number one advice that that you would give a new entrepreneur about to take the plunge?
Oh, that's a great question. And I do work with a lot of small businesses. So, you know, it's have a plan. And the smaller you are and the earlier you are in your process, the more the plan's going to change as you learn about your customers and your market and the space, et cetera. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't have a plan. Have a plan. It will help you stay focused on the right things. It will help you decide what to do and probably more importantly today, what not to do.
You're getting big nods from our friend Brian Patrick Cork in the corner. So so he agrees and that's a good thing also. Holly, you've got the book out. It's available everywhere fine books are sold.
Yes, is that, indeed.
Amazon.com. You've also got a...
It's available. You have a website for it as well as your own business website, right?
Right. The book has its own website, morethanaminute.com, and you can certainly join in with the blog and Twitter and check out the Facebook and the LinkedIn. And
Second Life? Can we see it on Second Life?
You know, I haven't got it on Second Life, but you've given me an idea.
Well, we'll have to get Holly on Second Life. Actually, one last mini question. You mentioned all of the new media tools that you're using to help spread the word and things like that. How key do you think that those are in today's world to your success with the book and, you know, as an entrepreneur in general? How have you been able to utilize these tools just to help you get the word out?
Well, you know, we're at the beginning of the process, but I have high hopes. I think it's a way to connect to people I certainly would probably not ever connect to. It's a very cost-effective or can be a very cost-effective marketing mechanism. I think it's probably pretty important. You know, I talk to clients a lot about Google's been around for 12 years. Everyone laughed at those guys. YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of those are really fairly new, and yet look at the millions of users we've got on those systems today. So, you know, use them. Don't be afraid of them. Try them out. You know, you've got to constantly expand your mind and try some of those new things while mm-hmm. staying focused on what's important.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Holly. You've got the book, morethanaminute.com, and I understand you're going to be in Atlanta in a few weeks.
I will be there on October 10th. We've got a public session that we're doing called Bursting Your Bubbles, and it talks about how to really leverage the power of your brain and your thought processes to maintain some of that focus that we think is so important today. So, you know, please check out morethanaminute.com. You can find on the calendar there more information about how to sign up for that session. We're going to have a great time, and you'll get a copy of the book and, you know, overall just learn some cool stuff.
Well, thank you so much, Holly.
thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you. I love talking to those in Atlanta. Used to live there, and it's great to be on a radio station where y'all don't think I talk funny.
All right.
Thanks, Holly.
All right. Take care.
Bye. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good stuff.
Yes, very good.
You ready to unleash Brian?
All right. Well, Brian's been in his cage. He's been waiting patiently for 20 minutes. We don't know him to be patient, but he's ready. Brian Patrick Cork is the owner of Brian Cork Human Capital here in the Atlanta area. He does HR recruiting. He does business coaching, and he is also just recently named to the Inc. 500 for the second year in a row, and was also just named to the Catalyst 25, which is a very high honor in this town.
Second year in a row,
yeah,
and second year in a row as well.
On a roll.
So on a roll. Well, welcome, Brian.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm settling in. It's you know, this radio thing isn't easy. It's not all glitz and glamour like they say.
Oh, you got a great radio voice.
Yeah.
That cold aside, right?
Yeah, cold aside. But
so what's happening in Brian Cork's world?
You know, lots of change. I think last time I was here 5 or 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, we were I'll use the word agonizing over what to do with Brian Cork Human Capital next in terms of next stage of development. And by the way, Eric, I don't own it. You know, that's why Brian Cork is all small caps. You know, it's not about me. It's about what we do. It's about everybody else. If we're,
you run Brian Cork Human Capital is what I should say.
Actually,
he works there.
Or it runs you?
My whole network and the referral process runs Brian Cork. You know, I'm just holding on, trying to make it and keep it running smoothly. In terms of what's happening in, I guess, Brian Cork Nation, you know, we're in transition. You know, we've had some honors. You know, 3 years in a row now, I keep telling my team, you know, we can't do any better than we're doing. You know, we're fully optimized. I got 12 guys around the world. You know, we're getting ready to break $16 million, which is not a lot of money, you know, in terms of the corporate realm, but for a small, you know, niche-oriented services company, you know, I know we're doing something right because the ROI, you know, per head count is off the chart. Mm-hmm.
And with only 12 employees, which is which is actually pretty remarkable.
I hope so. You know, I think that's an indication that we're doing really good work out there and people value us because we do not advertise, we do not market. It's all word of mouth. It's all referrals. In terms of what's happening next, you know, I don't think we're going to grow. You know, I think what's going to happen is we're going to probably breed the next generation of entrepreneurs in a very Ayn Randian fashion. My goal in all my businesses is to enable my partners and teammates to be in business for themselves. And so I've got 11 people, actually 10 people, basically ready to be in business for themselves. And that's going to enable me to go on to the next venture for myself as well.
How do you create that culture where you want them to work to the common goal of your organization, but you also want them to have the freedom to grow and to do their own thing?
Well, you know, Holly made a great point, you know, about communication and what leadership does. And I'll add to that by saying that it's all about enabling. So, and my granddad, you know, if you're ever going to ask me who my hero was, it'd have to be my grandfather, but... Granddad would often say, if you're going to judge a man, do it by the people around him. And so if you can have access to good men, good women, good people with common goals, common objectives, common worldviews, all based on integrity and that servant's heart, you bring them into bring them into your business plan, and you facilitate and enable them mm-hmm. to be successful. And so – you know, that's why I don't think I run Brian Cork Human Capital. I basically hold on to it, right? It's just, you know, I've got arguably the best of class people around me. They are true leaders in their own right, and they inspire me. All I have to do is make sure that they have all the tools and resources to be successful. And every business I've ever started, I've ever maintained, and ultimately sold had that same operating principle.
And you're what we call a serial entrepreneur. You do this over and over again, and you've been through the process a lot. You work with a lot of folks that are getting to the process themselves.
Yeah.
What's your number one advice to guy or gal off the street who says, "Hey, Brian, I'm starting a business."
Okay, you know, I'll cheat a little bit, and I'll sort of echo what Holly had said earlier as well. Got to have that plan, but then how do you get to the plan? And you know, if I don't care if it's a secular startup or even a ministry, for example, I think if you're going to be in business, you have to ask yourself some key questions. And those questions are, do I have a plan? Is my wife dialed in? Can I live without income for 18 months? You know, should I be doing this? Why am I doing this?
Right.
What am I good at? What do I want to do? Who needs me?
Right.
You know, the questions don't really change if you're starting an enterprise or if you're looking to change your job, right? I mean, it's always the same questions. And ultimately, it comes down to, do you have the DNA?
Right.
You know, to be an entrepreneur. Lee's heard me say this before. We've been published a couple times around this. In my worldview, there's three kinds of people. There's entrepreneurs, there's intrapreneurs, and then them corporate fellas. And so all that will prove itself out, you know, once you have a plan.
Now, part of your philosophy, though, is you like Ayn Rand, right?
Yes, I do.
Thomas Jefferson?
Absolutely.
Right. How does that come into play, you know, creating that culture and creating, you know, if you're about to build something and you have those kind of thoughts in your head, how does that help you build, you know, a worthwhile organization?
Well, you know, Ayn Rand, you know, she taught us to have faith in our ideals. And then, of course, Thomas Jefferson embodied ideals all based on integrity. You know, he was the architect of our Constitution. And I think where they... I think they give us traction in terms of our self-confidence is they were visionaries. And so they've always, both individuals in terms of my own research and why I try to embody, you know, how they conducted themselves is they always talked about having a vision, enabling people around them and driving that vision through people better than themselves.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of egoless.
Ego, yeah, you know, being a love cat, you know, it's
is that a Corkian term?
It's not, and I knew you were going to ask me that question, and I'm struggling now. Who's the guy that wrote Love Is the Killer App?
I haven't read that book, but I'm aware of it. So you know, he's the guy who coined that term.
Yeah, and I feel terrible because you know I quote him all the time, but. Love is a killer app, you know, being a love cat. Mm-hmm. And if you can find a way to not make it about yourself, but make it about the mission and the people around you, the United States Army does that.
You know,
Google does it. Apple did it or does it. I think most successful organizations find a way to make the larger organization the focus.
It was Tim Sanders.
Tim Sanders.
Tim right Sanders. On. I just went and Googled him.
See
for
that?
You.
Yep. Thank you, Tim.
So that's not so Love Cat is not in the Corktionary. It's from Tim Sanders.
It's in my lexicon.
Okay. Fair enough. So central to your idea about what makes a successful entrepreneur. So let's say deep down, I'm a corporate fella.
Yeah.
I really would have no business starting my own business. Is that would that be a fair statement?
Can he learn? Is it possible for him to learn?
Can I learn? Can I be reformed?
Couple meetings.
You know, fairly stated, and then good augmentation by Lee. You know, I'll give you one of my favorite analogies. Okay, so if you're an entrepreneur, you're rolling boulders uphill. If you're an intrapreneur, you're rolling boulders downhill. And if you're a corporate fella, you're keeping the villagers below from being crushed by the boulders.
I thought you were the boulder.
What's that?
I thought you'd be the boulder.
I would be the boulder. I've been called worse, you know. Bull in the china shop. So, the entrepreneurial realm is filled with fellas that were in a company where there was a great liquidity event, and you know, everywhere from Walmart to Google, it doesn't matter. You know, there were secretaries and there were product managers that ended up with big checks mm-hmm. when the companies went public, right? And that seems to inspire a lot of entrepreneurialism, but also inspires a lot of angry wives, And so, it really does come down to the laws of natural selection, you know, and the DNA thing. Unfortunately, there are many, many startups, and there's lots of reasons why, you know, 90% of them fail, right? And they're walking dead by 18 months. And it's, you know, I think an entrepreneur is somebody that can boldly and fearlessly write a check, put it on the table, stand over it, and rally resources, you know, to a vision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that means you have to have a lot of qualities and traits and not necessarily just skills. And so there are natural leaders.
Right.
And, or in some cases, there are entrepreneurs who simply understand they need to surround themselves with better and smarter, faster people.
Mm-hmm.
We all know lots of stories about entrepreneurs who get in their own way.
Sure.
Right. And, of course, corporate managers do the same thing. But the whole road to entrepreneurialism and then success is fraught with danger and uncertainty and the unknown. And, you know, there are many, many professional people that are wonderfully skilled and they have great hearts and they're very successful, but they're very good at things like marketing or sales or IT and development or human resources, all, you know, all the disciplines. But that they don't have the broad-based skills and acumen to actually start up and drive a, you know, company, a plan through, you know, various phases of startup and cultural evolution,
right,
emerging cultures, and then to liquidity event.
Can you talk about the risk taking? Because there's a lot of, like, especially the kind of the old school corporations where it's almost built into their DNA not to take risks. Like managers are afraid to fail, which means that they can't take a risk, because if you're not failing, then you're never going to have the success, you know. So they're always taking kind of the safe path, and they're, you know, covering their own butt, and they're not really pushing the envelope for their organization. How do you deal with that when you work for those kind of big companies? Is it best to just leave?
Well, you know, that question, the image that popped right in my head was, you know, ancient man. He was starving. He had nothing to lose. So he made his spear and went out and, you know, attacked, you know, went after some animal, right, so he could eat. As soon as he was, you know, fatter and less, you know, less hungry, he started building walls, right?
Right.
That's what happens in corporate America. I mean, you can already see the changes in Google. You know, mm-hmm. You see the changes in Apple.
And that's, like Holly, I think, said 12 years they've been around?
That's about right.
So now they're already getting kind of corporate-y, is that what you think?
Well, you know, probably I'm going to guess 4 years ago. One day there was a hire, right? And the HR person had to say to them, you know, you're probably not going to make $1 million here because your stock isn't going to work that way. And that was, you know, that was a wake-up call for the entire culture. You have two separate camps now. You have those that have made, you know, a lot of money,
right,
and are sitting on the vault. And then, you know, when they hire new people in, the question is, can they maintain the vault?
Right,
mm-hmm. You know, not grow the vault, and so there is that change.
But it's a natural maturation in corporations.
Is.
But is there?
But to answer your question, that's what breeds the next generation of entrepreneurs going well.
Because now they're like holding on to their own, right? They don't want to.
Well, or okay, I've learned some things, and I got this hunger, and you know, now I want to go try it myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've sat at the knees of the right people.
Right.
Now I'm going to try.
And you take the best practices from what you've learned, and then you go out on your own and try to, you know, find your own path.
Or you're a cultural terrorist, and you get thrown out on your butt, and you're going to try.
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of impetus for going out the door and trying it. But you know, it's that Western. And then, of course, North American and, of course, American pioneering spirit. You mm-hmm. know,
absolutely.
We think we have to try. And it comes down to maybe the greatest question is, am I afraid or am I not?
Right.
And what drives my fear and what drives my boldness?
Isn't that one of the value propositions of America as a whole, though, is that you can fail in America and then it's okay. Like, people don't – you're not shamed. Like, in some cultures, if you fail, you get one shot. And
right.
then – you know, you're off on an ice floe somewhere, where in this culture, it's like, oh, big deal. You know, filed bankruptcy or had three failed businesses. Now he's trying again.
Lots of Chinese maybe. You know, mm-hmm. if you're trying to start up a venture or your third or fourth venture, you have a track record of failure, you know, funding it's more difficult,
right.
You know, rallying other resources is more difficult. You know, Thomas Jefferson, you know, being, you know, in my view, the heterodox that he was, you know, he taught us that there's always an ideal, there's always a thought or an opinion or a position, but there's also alternative positions, and over time those will weave in and out of each other, and where they intersect, that's the truth and the reality of the day. And that's what we see, I think, in business. You know, there's one day you have a great idea, then a few months later it's exposed as a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
6 months later, maybe it was a good idea again because the market actually intersected with the opportunity.
Right.
But you got to try. And in
right.
and this country, you know, we have that got to give it a go attitude. But I think the one thing that you got to remember is that it's the laws of natural selection again.
Right.
It's that DNA element again. And 2% of people in business even try to be in business for themselves. And, you know, my gosh, 90% of that. So, you know, 0.9% actually mm-hmm. realize, you know, a viable business in this country.
You've alluded to it several times, but it seems that a big key to entrepreneurial success is staying a little bit nimble, being quick, being flexible, willing to change. How do you get from that corporate mindset where Likely was saying inertia can really be a killer, where, hey, we got to keep up the status quo, we've got to keep our jobs. How do you go from that kind of mentality to the entrepreneur where inertia is really the killer?
It's that big aircraft carrier mentality, right? It's harder to turn a big aircraft carrier in the ocean than it is a speedboat. You know, Lee had alluded to it earlier, you know, when comes the change? But I think the key is that nimble business plan. In a smaller business and organization where everyone's leaning forward, there's a lot more of excitement, you know, that inertia isn't in play yet. This also can work in smaller departments and business enterprises and divisions of organizations, but that nimble plan means you got a core group of leaders that are good vision casters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a plan that is reviewed constantly, monthly and quarterly, as opposed to, you know, biannually or once a year, the keen ability to identify what's not working quickly and then having that courage and responsibility
mm-hmm.
to affect change. You know, what are we doing wrong? What do we need to do? Having that situational and market awareness. And that's where nimble, fast-track business plans are absolutely crucial. And
right.
Holly made a great point. Have that strategic plan on your desk
mm-hmm.
and, you know, part of your mission statement around you.
And, you know, it used to be that a business plan was, you know, was a phone book that you kept in a binder and stuck on a shelf somewhere. But that's not what business owners should be doing today. It should be something small and adaptable and easily editable.
Yes, and by the way, we want to make sure we're drawing a very clear line between a corporate plan,
right?
You know, and there's like startups, there's emerging cultures,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are the behemoths, right? In terms of the plans are radically different. I mean, at the very beginnings of an organization, you know, company's development, you know, the thing that makes a lot of entrepreneurs or people starting businesses grit their teeth is that requirement for a business plan.
Right.
Some guy's trying to raise money, and he keeps hearing, well, I want to see your business plan. And right there, you can expose either yourself mm-hmm. or somebody in their lack of acumen. But the, you know, that are you writing the plan because you just want to raise money, or are you writing that plan because you genuinely want a blueprint to grow your business?
Mm-hmm.
But quite frankly, this is a very this is a great opportunity to define the differences in the nimbleness of your plan. Your first effort of your plan should be, okay, a blueprint that enables you to raise money, and then at some point as you evolve in your business plan, it's all about raising money.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, once you have that capital, what are you going to do to protect and grow that investment? And by the way, this is something that you never hear enough talk about, is good stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to make a point of this. If you're going to take somebody's money, be a good steward, and it really is about shareholder value. That's what Tim Sanders would say if he was sitting in this room as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you're a good steward, that's good karma. You know, then you develop, you know, pull through advocates. That's also part of your board of advisors who are out there to make sure that you're in good standing. It's not uncommon for your advisors and board members to be investors. It's all very synchronous.
Mm-hmm. Where I know that you believe very, very much in surrounding yourself with good people. You've mentioned it earlier. We've talked about it before in separate conversations. Let's say I'm starting a business. I'm starting fresh. Where would you suggest that I go looking for people that I can trust with my with my business and with
human
my
capital?
Idea?
You're looking for human capital.
Maybe not human capital in the sense that Brian does, but people that I can trust and people that I can pull into my vision and say, hey, I want to do this. Is this a good idea? What should I do?
You know, the first thing people want to say is, got to go to your network. And depending on where you live in this country, the network is viable or not, right? And so it also depends on you know, the sort of people you surrounded yourself with your entire life, because the longer you know somebody, the more comfortable they're going to be holding you accountable. And you definitely want people around you that will tell you what you need to know, not what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't forget, you have a wife for that.
Right.
Right. You also have in-laws for that. You know, and brother and sisters-in-law, and I reference that because I had people like that in my life that know me very well. They know my strengths and weaknesses. But beyond that, my accountability board reaches back to my professors in school, people that I've actually helped raise money for, or I've built their businesses. The accountability is the absolute key to that working for you. A dynamic body, and I call everybody a guy, right? I'm an old Virginia surfer, so everyone's a guy. But you need guys around you that represent a dynamic group that will come and go, but they have to be mission-specific about what you're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. because they become your pull-through advocates. So they know you, they understand how you think and the way you're going to operate, and then using that as a contextual roadmap to guide you, they have to be willing to invest in you emotionally,
mm-hmm.
you know, and give you the time as needed to help you be successful. So a body or a board of advisors is crucial, and that will come from hopefully several, you know, decades of relationship. Mm-hmm. If you're 23 years old, you know, I would start with men and my father's small group, or you know, access to men and women that my father knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm reaching here, but I mean, right. There's a generational element here of responsibility, community, child, as that person grows, et cetera.
Very good. Well, getting back to Brian the entrepreneur for a minute, what's next for you?
Oh, well, you know, I'm getting ready to launch my seventh business.
Lucky seven.
I hope so. You know, there's a couple things, you know, in the works. You know, I was listening to myself talk, and I like to hear myself talk. That's self-evident, right? The one time I didn't have a plan, you know, years ago was a period of my greatest failure. When I didn't surround myself with the right people. And the worst mistake you're ever going to make is the one that you repeat, right? Mm-hmm. And so right now, the plan involves an incubator, you know, leveraging all my skills and experience and my resources, mm-hmm. you know, and my network, et cetera. There is an incubator in the planning stages. We hope to own a building, you know, fairly shortly. We're handpicking 4 to 6 startup entrepreneurs that we can fund and then that we can rally resources around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll have small ownership interests in. And I get to sit in the middle of them and orchestrate and enable.
Also,
we're putting together an air services, air medical transportation service business as well. And I'll continue my coaching. That's one thing that I can do, you know, until I fall asleep outside of Starbucks, you know, forever, you know, in my chai tea. So.
Well, hopefully that's no time soon.
And you're speaking. Did we talk about your speaking?
No, we haven't talked about that.
Why don't you mention tomorrow or
tomorrow?
This week?
Tomorrow night, Catalyst Magazine is sponsoring a panel discussion around raising capital. That's going to be the Vinings Club. I think it starts around 5:30. And I understand that there's going to be a lot of people there listening to people that think they know what they're talking about. And I'll be on the panel.
Great.
And
do you know the website of that, Catalyst Magazine? Or
it's catalystmag.com. Mm-hmm. So CatalystMag.com. And I think you can still go on the website and register for the event tomorrow night. Beyond that...
at your university, aren't you speaking at Radford?
Yeah, Radford University, my alma mater. They have decided that I'm a subject matter expert around the economy and startup ventures and sustainability, best business practices. And so at the end of October, I'll be at Radford for their economic summit. I'll be the keynote speaker.
Very good. Congratulations.
That's exciting.
Hey, look, keep growing every year.
Thank you, sir.
And how can people get in touch with you if people say, well, you know, I need to have some of this Brian Cork in my life?
Everybody complains about Belinda, who's the gatekeeper, right? But if you want to go to our website, it's www.bchcroi.com. We have a toll-free number, 877-843-2675. But the website's the best way to go. You can get to me through that.
And your blog, get a little glimpse behind the curtain, right?
That's right.
Yeah, we do that. We have two blogs. My personal blog is unsinkablebriancork.com. As of Tuesday, over 2,000 hits a day.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, fan base there.
It's fascinating. You know, as a matter of fact, I would submit to you that maybe 30-35% of our business now is coming through
the blog,
my personal blog.
Yeah, that's the importance of blogging. Cannot be underestimated.
It's a window into my soul.
That's it.
You know,
people only want to do business with people they like.
That's right.
Well, and I am Irish, and I am lucky.
that helps too.
People seem to want. If I go back to what Granddad said about surrounding myself with the right people. So far, so good. People seem to want me to be successful.
Good for you.
Excellent. Well, congratulations again on all your success. Congratulations on Inc. 500 and Catalyst 25. Very, very big achievements for you. So,
thanks, Eric.
Congratulations. And
great job, Eric.
Did I make it?
You made it. Time's up.
Excellent.
Time to wrap up.
I was impressed.
Yeah, you're a natural.
Oh.
You even made eye contact.
I tried.
That's a bonus. Even with Holly, she was on the phone. It was,
yeah, that was challenging.
Through the
internet, but I could peer.
Holly was great, by the way. She gives me great hope.
Yes,
Holly is terrific. I've had the privilege of knowing her for a couple of months now, and she's really an inspiration. She knows her stuff, and her book is. I haven't read the whole thing, but the parts that I read are fantastic. She's a great writer.
That's maybe you can connect.
Well, you're going to find, you know, people. You'll find her book on my desk. I'm looking forward to reading that.
Good stuff.
Very good.
Well, this is Atlanta Business Radio. We will catch you next time.